Standing beside the Latin Sea, I want to speak my mind. In these rocks, olive oil and wine is my antiquity. How did I get old? How? My time has almost come. And where is my song really from? Where am I heading now? Because coming to self-knowledge with its whens and what-ifs has taken me to the abyss, right to the very edge. And all this Latin clarity, what is the point of that when I'm looking down the mine's shaft, to be or not to be? I am Nefeli Bara, happy that I can understand the deepest secrets of the land and the wind and the sea. I and not I is a hard way. Vague secrets I can guess, the shards of human consciousness from now and yesterday. I saw the sun ready to die, lost in my desert dream, and the best I could do was a scream. Then I began to cry. Welcome, dear listeners of Tres Cuentos, the bilingual podcast dedicated to Latin America's literary, historical, and traditional narratives. I am Carolina Quiroga Stoltz, and today we bring an old acquaintance to the show, the Nicaraguan writer Rubén Darío. The episode's opening is one of Rubén Darío's poems translated into English in the book Rubén Darío Selected Writings. Curiously, it's been 2 years since we published the first story from Rubén Darío, The Rubí. Before that, we have been publishing Myths and Legends, the story along with The Beautiful Soul of Don Damián by Juan Bosch and Little Saint Anthony by Tomás Carrasquilla were part of the first season dedicated to Latino America's literature. So I am very grateful to those three authors because their stories made the show visible to a wider audience. Now, that is not the only reason for bringing Rubén Darío again to the show. It just happens that the story we are presenting today, The Case of Mademoiselle Amélie, is considered a fantasy story. This cuento was originally published in the Argentine newspaper La Nación in 1894, and later re-edited and included in the anthology Prosas Profanas, Profane Prose, in 1896. However, today's English version can be found in the book Rubén Darío Selected Writings, edited by Ilan Stavans and translated by Andrew Hurley, Greg Simon, and Stephen F. White, published by Penguin Books. The Case of Mademoiselle Amélie comes in the voice of the storyteller and educator Kevin Cordy, who I will present after the story. While visiting a longtime friend, an old doctor is prompted to tell a story to explain why he disagrees with the phrase, "if only time would stop." The man tells a story that defies all scientific knowledge, where a girl he met in his youth remains the same for decades, the story of a girl for whom time literally stopped.
The Case of Mademoiselle Amélie by Rubén Darío. Read by Kevin Cordy. A story for New Year's that Dr. Z is illustrious, eloquent, dashing, that his voice is deep and vibrant, his gestures hypnotic and mysterious, especially after the publication of his work, The Sculpture of Daydreams. These things you might be able to deny or accede to with certain reservations, but that his bald head is unique, remarkable, lovely, solemn, lyrical, if you like, oh, that you could never deny. I am certain, for how could one deny the light of the sun, the fragrance of roses, and the narcotic properties of certain verses? Very well, then. Last night, shortly after we saluted the midnight bells with a salvo of 12 champagne corks of the finest Rodin, in that lovely Rococo dining room belonging to the Sybaritic Jew Lowensteiger, the bald pate of Dr. Z, hallowed with pride, raised in burnished ivory orb, whose mirror-like surface and seem to contain, by some caprice of the light, two sparks that form, I know not how, a shape very like the glowing horns of Moses. The doctor directed his grand gestures and wise words in my direction. From there had issued from my lips, almost always closed, some banal phrase. This one, for example, oh, if only time would stop. The look the doctor gave me and the sort of smile that adorned his mouth after hearing my exclamation, I confessed, would have unnerved anyone. Dear sir, he said, were I not totally disillusioned with youth? Did I not know that all of you who are beginning to live are already dead? That is, dead in the soul, without faith, without enthusiasm, without ideals, gray-haired on the inside, no more than mere masks of life. Yes, did I know that? Yet not see in you something more than a fin de senisi man, I would tell you that phrase you have just spoken, oh, if time would only stop, has found in me its most satisfactory response. Yes, I repeat, your skepticism prevents me from speaking as on another occasion I might. I believe, I answered in a firm, serene voice, in God and His Church. I believe in miracles, and I believe, too, in the supernatural. Well, that being the case, I'll tell you all something that will make you smile. And I hope my narrative will also make you think. Not counting Minna, our host's daughter, four of us had remained behind in the dining room. Roquet, the journalist, Perrault, the abbot just sent in by Hirsch, the good doctor, and I. In the distance, we heard the gaiety of the salons, the usual words of the first hour of the new year. Happy New Year! Happy New Year! The doctor went on. Who among men is so wise as to say this is so? Nothing is known for a certainty. Ignoramus and ignoramus. Who among men understands the concept of time? Who knows precisely what space is? Science proceeds by fits and starts, groping in the darkness, poking along like a blind man. And it sometimes thinks it has conquered when it manages to glimpse some vague glimmer of the true light. No one has ever been able to pull the snake's mouth from its tail in that endless symbiotic circle. From the thrice great Hermes to our own day, the human hand has been able to lift barely one quarter of the mantle that covers the eternal Isis. Nothing has been learned for an absolute certainty about the three great expressions of nature, facts, laws, and principles. I, who have attempted to delve into the immense field of mystery, have lost almost all my illusions. I, who have been called wise in illustrious universities and voluminous books, I, who have consecrated my life to the study of humankind, its origins, its end, I, who have penetrated the Kabbalah, the mysteries of the occult, and the theosophy, who has passed from the material plane of the sage to the astral plane of the wizard and the spiritual plane of the magus, who knows how Apollonius of Tyre and Paracelsus
worked their wonder, and who in our own day have aided the Englishman Crookes, I who have dwelled in the Buddhist's karma and the Christian's mysticism, and know both the unknown science of the Farquhars and the theology of the Roman priests. I tell you that we sages have seen not a single ray of the supreme light, and that the immensity and eternity of the mystery from a single frightful truth.
Then addressing himself to me,
do you know what the principles of man are? Grupa, jiva, linga, sharia, karma, rupa, manas, buddhi, atma. That is the body, the force vital, the astral body, the animal soul, the human soul, the spiritual force, and the spiritual essence.
Seeing Mina put on an expression almost of desolation, I dared interrupt the doctor. I think you were going to explain to us that time.
Well, he said, since you seem not to like dissertations for prologues, let's get right to the story I was going to tell you, which is the following. "23 years ago in Buenos Aires, I met the Raval family, whose founder, a delightful French gentleman, had held a consular post during the times of the dictator, Rosas. Our houses adjoined one another. I was young and enthusiastic, and in terms of beauty, the three mademoiselles Raval would have given the three graces a good run for their money. There's no need to mention, I suppose, the very few sparks were needed to light the bonfire of love."
Love, pronounced the obese sage, the thumb of his right hand hanging in the pocket of his waistcoat as his swift, fat fingers drummed on his potent abdomen.
"I frankly confess that no one of them caught my fancy more than others, and that Claire, Josephine, and Amelie all held the same place in my heart. Or perhaps not the same place, because both sweet and ardent eyes of Amelie, her gay and red laughter, her childish piquity, I suppose I must say that she was my favorite. She was the youngest. She was barely 12, and I was past 30. For that reason, and because the young creature had a mischievous, jolly way about her, I treated her like the child she was. And between the other two, shared out my incendiary looks, my sighs, my squeezings of the hands, and even my serious promises of matrimony. In a word, I confess to you all a most reprehensible and horrid bigamy of passion. But oh, little Amelie, when I went to the house, it was she who ran to greet me, with her smiles and her flattery. Have you forgotten my bonbons? Oh, that sacramental question. I would feel overcome with joy, and my somewhat stifly polite greetings, and I would shower the girl with rich rose-flavored caramels and delicious chocolate drops, which she, open-mouthed, would savor with a loud patol, lingual, and dental music. The reason behind my feelings for this little girl with the knee-length skirts and pretty eyes, I cannot explain it to you, but the fact is that when my studies took me away from Buenos Aires, I feigned emotion when I paid farewell to Claire, who would look at me with a large, pained, and sentimental eyes. I gave a false squeeze to the hands of Josephine, who held between her teeth, as so as not to cry, a bathos handkerchief, and upon the forehead of Amelie, I bestowed a kiss, the purest yet most ardent, the most chaste yet wanton of all I've given in my life. And so I embarked for Calcutta, precisely like your beloved and admired General Masia, who, when we had departed for the Orient, himself full of youth and his pockets full of resounding new gold coins, I sailed away thirsting for a taste of the occult sciences, and it was my intention to study among the Mahamas of India those things that impoverished Western science still cannot teach us. The epistolary friendship that I had kept up with Madame Blavatsky had opened many doors for me in the land of the Fakirs. And more than one guru, knowing my hunger for knowledge, put himself at my disposal, offering to guide me along the path to the sacred fountain of truth. And although my lips believed they would sate their thirst in the cool diamantine waters, there was in fast no quenching my bottomless thirst. I sought with great determination what my eyes yearned to contemplate. The Zoroastrian Karapas, the Persian Caliph, the Kavi Khan of Indian philosophy, the Paracelsian Archimedes, Swedenborg's Lembas. I listened to the word of the Buddhist monks in the deep forest of Tibet. I studied the ten Sephiroth of the Kabbalah, from that which symbolizes limitless space to that which, called Malkuth, contains the principle of life. I studied the spirit, air, water, fire, the heights, the depths, the Orient, the Occident, the North, and the South, and I almost came to understand and even know intimately Satan, Lucifer, Astro, Beelzebub, Asmodeus, Belphegor, Mabina, Lilith, Adramos, and Baal. In my desperate eagerness for comprehension, in my insatiable desire for wisdom, just when I believed I achieved my ambitions, I would find signs of my weakness and manifestations of my poverty, and those grand ideas, God, space, time, would form a most impenetrable haze before my eyes. I traveled through Asia, Africa, Europe, and the Americas. I helped Colonel Alcott found the Theosophical Circle in New York. Doctor suddenly asked, staring balefully at blonde Mina, "Do you know what true science and immortality is? A pair of blue eyes or black ones?"
"And the end of the story," the young lady sweetly groaned.
"I vow to you, gentlemen, and lady, that is what I'm telling is absolutely true. The end of the story? Just over a week ago, I returned to Argentina. After 23 years of absence, I've grown fat, quite fat indeed, and bald as your kneecap. But in my heart, the flame of love, the vestal of the aging bachelor, still lives." And of course, the first thing I did was find out the whereabouts of the Raval family, the Raval girls. I was told the girls in the Amelie Raval case. And these words were accompanied with a special smile. I came to suspect that poor Amelie, the poor child, and I searched and searched until I found the house. When I entered, I was greeted by an old butler, who took my card and asked me to step into a parlor into which everything bore a hue of sadness. On the walls, the mirrors were covered with crepe veils of mourning, and two large portraits in which I recognized the two older sisters looked out melancholy and dark over the piano. Soon, Claire and Josephine, oh my friend, that was all. Then a conversation filled with reticence and timidity, broken phrases and sad, very sad smiles of intelligence. From all I could manage to piece together, I gathered that neither of these young women had married. As for Amelie, I dared not ask. My question might strike these poor creatures at some sort of bitter irony. Remind them perhaps of some terrible and irredeemable disgrace and dishonor. Just then, I saw a little girl come skipping in with a body and face exactly. But exactly, my friends. Like those of my poor Amelie. She skipped over to me and the other girl's very voice exclaimed, "Have you forgotten my bonbons?" I was speechless. The two sisters looked at each other, stricken with a sudden pallor, and shook their heads disconsolately, muttering some words of farewell and making a gosh bow. I rushed out of the house, as though pursued by some strange gust of wind. Since then, I've learned everything. The girl that I believed at that moment to be the fruit of a guilty love affair is Amelie, the same young creature that I left 23 years ago. She'd remained a child. The course of her life had been halted. The clock of time had been stopped at a certain hour. Who can say out of what unknown God's inscrutable plan? Dr. Z was at the moment entirely bald.
Very well, let's check the time in your phones or watches and make sure that while you were listening, time did not stop. Now, I remember that old saying, be careful what you wish for. How many times have I wished for something carelessly? And when it finally happened, it was not what I hoped it would be. All I have to say is that words have power, for good or bad. While writing this commentary, it occurred to me to look on the internet at any articles that mentioned the possibility for someone to get stuck in time. And apparently, it is possible. On July 19, 2009, ABC News published an article titled, "Doctors Baffled, Intrigued by Girl Who Doesn't Age." The article written by Bob Brown tells us, Brooke hasn't aged in the conventional sense. Dr. Richard Walker of the University of South Florida College of Medicine in Tampa says Brooke's body is not developing as a coordinated unit, but as independent parts that are out of sync. She has never been diagnosed with any known genetic syndrome or chromosomal abnormality that would help explain why. She still has baby teeth at 16, for instance, and her bone age is estimated to be more like 10 years old. Brooke weighs 16 pounds and is 30 inches tall. She doesn't speak, but she laughs when she's happy, and she clearly recognizes the people around her. She has three sisters, Emily 22, Caitlin 19, and Carly 13. All three are bright, active, and of normal size and development. They say that Brooke has ways of expressing herself like the teenager she is. And although she looks like a six-month-old, she kind of has a personality of a 16-year-old. Well, there you have it. Now we travel from Baltimore, where Brooke lived, to the other side of the world, to South Korea. In the article, Meet the 26-Year-Old Man Who Never Grew Up, published on June 22, 2015, on the UK website Metro, we are told about a young man who still looks like a 10-year-old boy. Journalist Allison Lynch tells us that Shin says he enjoys drinking beer and clubbing on the weekends, but he says he hasn't yet hit puberty, because he suffers from a rare condition known as Highlander syndrome. The condition has caused his body to age at a very slow, almost imperceptible rate. I know, sometimes it is hard to believe these kind of things, but there are all kinds of oddities in the world that science and medicine are still trying to solve. Like Rubén Darío said in the story, science proceeds by fits and starts, groping in the darkness, poking along like a blind man. And it sometimes thinks it has conquered when it manages to glimpse some vague glimmer of the true light. I am sure more than one scientist obsessed with eternal youth must have already subjected those with abnormalities, looking for a way to extend humanity's youth. This reminds me of old circuses, where these types of conditions or syndromes were known as freaks and were exploited to satisfy the curiosity of those who believed themselves to be normal. I will leave in the transcript the links to the two articles I mentioned and another one that I found about the so-called freaks exhibited in the old circuses. It's time to present today's voice, Kevin Cordy, who graciously read and adapted today's cuento. Kevin D. Cordy, PhD, is a professional storyteller who has traveled to over 40 states, England, Japan, Canada, Scotland, and Qatar, sharing the rich value of the storytelling and story-making process. He also serves as an assistant professor of education and literacy at Ohio University, Lancaster. He is the author of many books on the art, most recently, You Don't Know Jack, A Storyteller Goes to School, published by the University of Mississippi Press in 2019. He recently served on Learning for Justice Advisory Board, formerly Teaching Tolerance, and is currently a Global Teacher Education Fellow with the Longview Foundation. He believes that stories can change the world. We just need to listen more closely to what people are telling us. Stories have the potential of bringing us together. You can find out more about his work at www.kevincordy.com. And Cordy is spelled C-O-R-D-I. All right, before I tell you more about what fantasy is, and of course, before talking a bit more about Rubén Darío's life, I want to remind you of a few things. First, if you have not done it yet, please subscribe to our newsletter through our website, trescuentos.com. Also, we sincerely appreciate your efforts in helping us grow by sharing the episodes with your friends or when you use them in your classes. In addition, I wanted you to know that I appeared in the podcast Afar, Travel Tales, where I told a very summarized version of my journey to the U.S. So I will be leaving the link to that episode in the transcripts. Finally, we are looking for volunteers and collaborators all the time. We need help with marketing, translations, reading aloud, etc. So if you got the time and feel like lending a hand, don't hesitate to get in touch with us at tres.cuentos.podcast@gmail.com. Moving on, in the prologue of the book Antología del Cuento Fantástico Hispanoamericano, Anthology of the Fantastic Hispanic American Short Story, Oscar Hahn tells us that Hispanic American fantasy began in the mid-19th century. One of the first exponents was the Ecuadorian writer Juan Montalvo, with his story Gaspar Blondin, published in 1858. The story's style reflects the literary current of Romanticism. It describes a gloomy environment where the main character is linked to an underworld and demonic life with hints of eroticism. Hahn continues by saying that the deliberate search for what was fantastic or marvelous was propelled by the modernist writers and their followers in the late 19th and early 20th centuries. Finally, before anyone gets fantasy and magical realism confused, let me clarify that they are not the same. According to the Brazilian author Irlimar Ciampi, the goal of fantasy is to cause in the reader a physical reaction, a worry or fear, to plant the seed of doubt. In contrast, magical realism provokes an effect of enchantment. Within magical realism, there is no doubt, no fear. Instead, all wonders are reality's natural ingredients. Very well, it is time to talk about the life of today's featured author. Félix Rubén García Sarmiento, better known as Rubén Darío, was considered the prince of Spanish literature for his significant impact, innovative style, and for being the leading Spanish-American promoter of the modernist current. The Nicaraguan author was born in January 8, 1867, in Metapa. At a very young age, Rubén Darío had superior language skills, and when his parents' marriage fell apart, young Rubén found refuge in literature. His continued fascination with reading led him to develop his first verses at the age of 10. These activities allowed him to overcome the absence of love between his parents, which led them to abandon their marriage of convenience. At this point, his great uncles, Félix Ramírez Madrigal and Bernarda Sarmiento, took over his upbringing. At the age of 14, he began publishing in several media, including the newspaper La Verdad de León, León's Truth. During this time, Félix Rubén started calling himself Rubén Darío, acknowledging the nickname by which his paternal family was known, Los Daríos. In 1882, the young Nicaraguan writer revealed his fascination with the bourgeois life. In a meeting with the president of El Salvador, Rafael Saldívar, with whom he crosses a couple of words, Rubén Darío assures him that he wants to achieve a good social position. As a result of his conviction, he begins a path full of modern and fantastic compositions, hoping to achieve recognition. But it was not until 1888 that he managed to get closer to his dream, thanks to the prestige achieved with the publication of the book Azul, Blue. Like the character of Dr. Z in his story The Case of Mademoiselle Amélie, published in 1894, three women marked the life of the Nicaraguan poet Rubén Darío. His first wife, Rafaela Contreras, died suddenly in 1893. The second and most complex of his relationships was with Rosario Melina Murillo. She was a strong adolescent crush that marked him deeply due to her beauty, according to the poet's description. Several years later, he met her again, and as soon as he became a widower, Rosario and her brother forced him to marry her. This union was difficult from the start, and gradually the marriage turned into a nightmare that lasted for more than a decade. The third lady and his most precious love was Francisca Sanchez, a poor, illiterate Spanish woman. In 1898, Darío was sent to Spain as a correspondent for the Argentine newspaper La Nación to report about the country after the war against the United States. That is where he met Francisca, who, as the poet himself said, would be the woman who gave him her sweetness, love, and respect until the end. The author traveled through Europe and Latin America and eventually died in 1916 in Nicaragua, leaving a remarkable legacy for the Hispanic literature. After his death, Francisca zealously guarded his literary legacy, stories, manuscripts, and letters of the poet in a blue trunk for more than 40 years. It was not until 1956 that Francisca donated the chest to the Spanish state. To conclude today's program, I want to share a very short poem from today's author, Rubén Darío, about living many lives. Reincarnations. First, I was a bed of coral, then a beautiful gem, then green and hanging ivy on a stem. Then I was an apple, a lily growing in the fields, a young girl's lips as she yields, a skylark singing in the morning. And now I am like a palm in Jehovah's light, a soul or a psalm that is sung to the wind. And that is all for today. We will be back next Thursday with another episode in English from the Mexican writer Alfonso Reyes. He tells us a story that describes what happens when a severed hand comes to life. Until the next cuento, adios, adios. Tres Cuentos Podcast is produced with support from PRX and the Google Podcasts Creator Program. Tres Cuentos is an exercise of creative writing, researching, and retelling. Today, my thanks go to Don Heimel and Kevin Cordy. Remember that you can listen to Tres Cuentos on any podcast app, Google Podcasts, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, iVoox, or wherever you find us listed. Also, check our website, www.trescuentos.com. Last, if you enjoyed this episode, consider sharing it with your friends. The music and sound effects were downloaded from the YouTube audio library and freesound.org. The list of credits per song can be found in the transcript. Thanks for listening. Adios, adios.